Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. It's our monthly book show, and the theme is swimming with us, reference librarian Jill Erickson. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
This was your idea.
It was my idea.
Which is perfect because as we're starting this, you know, kicking off the summer season, everybody's ready to do a little swimming.
Not only that, but we have a news hook because that man, Lewis Pugh, who's a fairly well-known open water swimmer, last week swam around Martha's
Vineyard.
That's
right.
So,
Well, this is very important then that we're talking about swimming books today.
But you didn't know he was going to do that.
No, I didn't know. No, but I'm really glad he did. It's one of those lucky things.
Yeah.
And it was for shark awareness.
Yeah.
He's very concerned.
50th anniversary of Jaws.
So he described, now the swim was agonizing because it's so cold.
Yeah.
It was like 60 miles. He didn't do it in one day. He took, I think, 12 days. Like,
yeah, he'd have hypothermia.
But
if he did,
that nor'easter we had, he was out
swimming.
Unbelievable.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
No huge waves, no visibility.
Wow.
So he talked about all that, but he also said, you know, when you do something like this, your mind is on what could be below you,
mm-hmm.
i.e. sharks. So the whole point where he's trying to acclimate us to sharks, he himself is afraid of sharks.
Yeah, well, and very could be a shark underneath him around
Absolutely.
Here, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, so give us your first book, Peter.
Okay, my first book is called Splash, 10,000 Years of Swimming by Howard Means. So this is a kind of a macro look at everything in swimming. It starts like this. Swimming conjures many things. Fierce competition, recreation, exercise, open water, a chance to cool off, show some skin, or sink below the surface and be all alone. Swimming is both a precise skill and a performance art. Think water ballet and synchronized swimming. It's wading, splashing, dunking, the dead man's float, Marco Polo, snorkeling, body surfing, a poolside or beachside or lakeside summer romance. The near weightlessness of swimming is the closest most of us will ever get to zero gravity space travel. The terror of being submerged is the nearest some of us ever come to sheer hell.
Mm.
So it just sums up the wonder of it, because when you're swimming, it's the closest we come to flying, too. You're flying underwater. Anyway, the title of this, 10,000 Years of Swimming, is very interesting because it comes from, how far back does swimming go, human beings? How long? So in 1933, they discovered this cave in the Western Sahara, in Egypt, in the Egyptian part of the Sahara. And in this cave that no one had been in for God knows how long, they found cave art that showed swimmers. But this is one of the driest spots on Earth. So pictographs showing swimmers, beyond doubt. How is it possible? And that led to all this realization that in those days, they hadn't realized that it hadn't always been a desert.
Mm-hmm.
That thinking about it dates from 1933, and now we know that it was much wetter then, and these people were actually swimming. So that's how he gets the 10,000 years
wow.
of swimming.
Yeah.
It's everything you ever want to know about swimming. And of course, if something like this comes up, Ben Franklin is going to be because
that's right.
He knew everything.
Okay. Ben had his hand in everything. Didn't he?
So he was an excellent swimmer.
Oh, I did not know that.
He was an excellent swimmer, and on one of his trips back to England, when he still wasn't really 100% established in Philadelphia, he gave swimming lessons, and they were so successful that he almost stayed to become a swimming instructor. History would have been a lot different. Anyway, he had his own ideas about how to teach swimming. So Franklin being Franklin, he begins with some deeply practical advice. To overcome your fear of the water, confront it head on. Wade into the river or at the bottom of your garden, at a place where the water deepens gradually until you're up to your breast. Next, turn back toward shore, toss an egg in front of you, and let it sink to the bottom. In some place still deep enough that you can't simply reach down and grab it without submerging yourself. Finally, keeping your eyes open, dive for the egg, thrash for it, do whatever you have to do to grab that egg and bring it back to the surface. And note as you do how very hard it is to actually sink in the water.
Funny.
So you know.
It's a great idea.
We need him. So anyway, this, I really recommend it. It's very well written. There's just everything about swimming is in it. Oh, including, I should mention, Annette Kellerman. Around the turn of the last century, she was Australian. And she was the first one. She was an excellent swimmer and an open water swimmer. But at that time, women and men too had to wear like bathing costumes mm-hmm. that really would lead toward drowning. You know, she designed. It wasn't in our sense revealing at all, but she designed this, you know, costume where she could swim, and. One of the places she swam was it with this new costume was at Revere Beach. So I'm introducing a local angle now, and she was arrested.
Oh my goodness! So, yeah,
Annette Kellerman is
showing her ankles. How could she? Right?
Splashed by Howard Meade.
All right, Jill.
Well, I actually brought that book along as well, but what I want to read from that book is the epigraph, because what I did not know until I read this epigraph is that Oliver Sacks was a huge swimmer. And there's this great epigraph written by Oliver Sacks, and he writes, "There is an essential rightness about swimming, as about all such flowing and, so to speak, musical activities. And then there is the wonder of buoyancy, of being suspended in this thick, transparent medium that supports and embraces us. One can move in water, play with it in a way that is no analog in the air. One can explore its dynamics, its flow this way and that. One can move one's hands like propellers, or direct them like little rudders. One can become a little hydroplane or submarine, investigating the physics of flow with one's own body. And beyond this, there is all the symbolism of swimming, its imaginative resonances, its mythic potentials." Mm. And that's from Oliver Sacks, who also wrote an essay about swimming in his book, Everything in Its Place, First Loves and Last Tales. And this is all about him swimming, and here's a little bit from this, and it's a short essay that he wrote. "Swimming gives me a sort of joy, a sense of well-being so extreme that it becomes at times a sort of ecstasy. There is a total engagement in the act of swimming, in each stroke, and at the same time, the mind can float free, become spellbound, in a state like a trance. I have never known anything so powerfully, so healthily euphoriant, and I am addicted to it, fretful when I cannot swim." Mm. He's such a good writer anyway, but I had no idea until putting the show together he was a big swimmer.
What was the second one? You said Splash, but what was this one?
And the Oliver Sacks, Everything in Its Place.
Right.
And what I have brought along as well this morning, and this is the exciting part. It's not a book, but it actually is a book. I was so happy that I remembered this. I don't know why it came to me when we were doing the show, but for some reason it came to me. Clive Thompson, who has written a bunch of books, has wrote an article. He regularly writes articles, but this one was called "A Search Engine That Finds You Weird Old Books." And one of the weird old books that you can put in any word,
like,
and
a
it will
topic
take you back.
Or, yeah.
You can one single word, and you can get a book that you didn't know about. And he says one of his strategies is reading super old books online, that he thinks this is a great thing. So any book published in the U.S. before 1925 is in the public domain. So you can do amazingly fun book browsing online. He says, "I cannot recommend this more highly. The amount of fascinating stuff you can encounter in old books and magazines is delightful. I still do this. Old books are socially and culturally fascinating. They give you a glimpse into how much society has changed and also what's remained the same." So I thought, well, I have to put in the word swimming and see what I get. And I got two really great books. The one that, one of the things that really struck me about this was how long the titles of these books are. This was written in 1816, and the title is, this could take a while, but the title is Scientific Swimming, being a series of practical instructions on an original and progressive plan by which the art of swimming may be readily attained with every advantage of power in the water, accompanied with 12 copper plate engravings comprising 26 appropriate figures correctly exhibiting and elucidating the action and attitude in every branch of that invaluable art. That is the title of this book.
Wow.
Scientific Swimming by Jay Frost. Came out in 1816. But one of the incredible things about this is just what shows up in here, because what they knew and what they didn't know about swimming. And here's a little bit of his preface. The preface also goes on for a very long time. I will just read one little bit of it. The following work is offered to the public not as a speculative theory, but as the result of a long and successful practice, the author having been, for several years, engaged in teaching the art of swimming. Experience has enabled him to discover and correct the errors to which first attempts are particularly liable, and to form a system upon an original plan which has been found to be perfectly adequate to the purpose and which a common capacity may practically apply with facility. And he goes on and on and on about, and part of it, though, is trying to teach children swimming, which I thought was sort of surprising in 1816 that they would be putting the kids into the water. And he himself had been, the author of this, a swimmer from his childhood, he says. But it's really just a fascinating look. And then I found another book, which is called, another long title here, Swimming, a bibliographical list of works on swimming by the author of the handbook of... Wait for this. The author of the handbook of fictitious names. which I'm like, wow. Well, I want that. Now I want to read that one as well. But in any case, this came out in 1868, and it says on the title page, only 25 copies printed, which is quite extraordinary.
Try to find that. Yeah.
And it's works, a list of works on swimming from the invention of printing to the present time. So it's really amazing what you can find if you go to the weird old book finder. And I'll give you the website when you put up the book list so people can go take a look at it. It is just astonishing to me, and how swimming has been around. I mean, that were books written that long ago on what was proper swimming. It's just extraordinary.
I didn't know you could do it wrong, right? Proper swimming. Okay. Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626 if you have a book for our list with the theme of swimming. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It is our monthly book show, and our theme is swimming. With us this morning, reference librarian Jill Erickson and New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Okay, the interesting things you learn on a break. Peter, you're saying you come from a family of swimmers.
Yes.
You actually did, was it spear diving? What was
spear
that?
Fishing in the Bahamas.
Spear fishing.
As a job. When I got out of college. So the whole family, we were into scuba diving and everything very early, but we all preferred free diving. For example, in the Bahamas, it's not legal to spearfish with a scuba tank. It's not sporting, and it's really, just go down to the bottom and you wait for the fish to come. You know, you're breathing there and you kill them. But you, if you have to hold your breath and go down 70 or 80 feet, you know, with your spear gun, that's a whole different, that's a sport. And Yeah, I did. I did a lot of that.
Yeah, and they say write about what you know, right? So that's going to be in your new book. You're writing a little
bit
about that.
Well, in Mrs. Plansky Goes Rogue, that's coming out in July, written under my pen name Spencer Quinn. Even though she's 71, Mrs. Plansky does do a little bit of emergency free diving.
Emergency free diving. All right,
goes rogue.
What have you got next for our swimming thing?
Before I get to that. If any of the listeners, there were two things I tried to find and I couldn't. But if any of the listeners know, I'd really like to know. One is, what percentage of people know how to swim?
Oh.
Not the people who say they know how to swim. I think that's about 50. But what percentage really do know how to swim? And the other thing is there a good book on how to teach children how to swim? I looked and I couldn't find one, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
All right.
Well, and it's, I just want to speak to that, which is that as a kid, we had a swimming pool that was not so far from the town, but it seemed like every summer, just before the pool opened, I would fall off my bicycle or something and have some sort of injury that I could not go into the water. And I love being in the water. And so, and I finally got swimming classes the year I was at UMass Amherst, and they had a great swimming pool there. And I, as a class, you could take swimming lessons. And that, it wasn't until I was a junior in college that I actually really learned how to swim. And it was fabulous. But being, but the biggest thing when we were kids was like, oh, the pool is open, because
pool,
of course
right.
it was an outdoor pool. So that was the big excitement of the year.
Well, my next one, if it's, am I allowed to do a short story?
Absolutely.
Okay, is The Swimmer by John Cheever. Okay, John Cheever, the very well-known short story writer. You have it too.
Perfect story. Go.
Well, so I did 10,000 years of, like, that's the macro. Okay, this is the micro. It's a short story. I used to love, I shouldn't even be saying this, I used to love his short stories, but I hadn't read one in, you know, 30 years maybe. And now there was an almost frozen and aspect to it. I'm not going to say he's a wonderful writer and his technical ability is off the charts. Anyway, this story, The Swimmer, which was made into a movie with Burt Lancaster, if people remember him, a wonderful mid-20th century actor. This book is, it's written in third person close. It's a kind of, and nevertheless, a kind of unreliable narrator. But the idea is that, well, here's the idea. Nettie Merrill is the character, and he's sitting having drinks at a neighbor's swimming pool in a wealthy Connecticut suburb. The sun was hot. Nettie Merrill sat by the green water, one hand in it, one around a glass of gin. He was a slender man. He seemed to have this especial slenderness of youth. And while he was far from young, he had slid down his banister that morning and given the bronze backside of Aphrodite on the hall table a smack as he jogged toward the smell of coffee in his dining room. He might have been compared to a summer's day, particularly the last hours of one. And while he lacked a tennis racket or a sail bag, the impression was definitely one of youth, sport, and clement weather. He had been swimming, and now he was breathing deeply, stertorously, as if he could gulp into his lungs the components of that moment, the heat of the sun, the intenseness of his pleasure. It all seemed to flow into his chest. His own house stood in Bullitt Park, 8 miles to the south, where his four beautiful daughters would have had their lunch and might be playing tennis. Then it occurred to him that by taking a dogleg to the southwest, he could reach his home by water. His idea is that he will follow all the swimming pools in this suburb, swim in each of them, and eventually end up home. So it's one of these journeys, and it's one of these journeys where you get to sort of know yourself, and it starts off very optimistic and gets darker and darker and darker.
as he gets to
this home with the four daughters and the wife, but they're not there. And the house is empty, and he is empty. Like, it's brilliantly done, and the movie is also really good. So, The Swimmer by John Cheever,
and the movie is just heartbreaking. I mean, the movie is really well done, but very heartbreaking and very dark. It's not a cheerful story, and it's not a cheerful film, but really fabulous. Yeah.
So I just tried to help you here with a little Google search on how many people can swim. And you mentioned 80% of Americans claim they can swim. But according to the Red Cross, it has been proven that only 56% of the population can properly perform the five basic skills that are required to be considered to be able to swim. Okay. So it's impossible to know exactly how many people worldwide can swim.
But at least for us,
for
America.
For America, it's about half.
Okay, that's scary.
Yeah. Well, this is
especially living on Cape Cod and the islands. I mean,
This is why you need lifeguards and the Coast Guard and all those people who can and know your swimming ability, right? I am not a strong swimmer. I like to just float in the pool, swim a little bit here or there. Although swimming is, as you know, great exercise. You're using every
muscle.
Best.
Yeah,
the best. Yeah. So, I mean, it's if you, you know, you can. But I could not. I mean, there's no way I'm jumping in the ocean to save anybody. I'd drown right along with them. But this is why we need the lifeguards, right?
I guess. But better is to learn how to swim. And there are, this is one of the great things about living in Cape Cod. So I do a lot of bike riding. I go all summer. And sometimes I swing past Chappaquoid Beach. And very often this winter, for the first winter, people were swimming. Now, they had wetsuits, but they were in there swimming. Mm-hmm. I just love that. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. All right. Joanna's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Joanna.
Good morning.
You got a suggestion for us? Yeah.
Before I talk about the books I was calling in about, just a piece on the John Cheever story. That story, the summer, was my introduction to John Cheever, and then I proceeded to read everything he wrote. But I believe that he was the inspiration with that story for Robert Finch's first series of articles when he moved to the Cape about swimming in every kettle pond on Cape Cod.
Oh,
and that's
interesting.
How I found John Cheever.
Okay, that's excellent because he wasn't only the inspiration of that. I'll get to that soon.
Yeah, go ahead, Joanna.
Yeah. So I chimed in recently to your program, so I don't know if you've already brought up Lynn Cox.
I'm getting to that. But go ahead.
Okay, then I won't preempt you, but if you do, I had read her other two books, Swimming to Antarctica and Grayson, but recently read Swimming in the Sink, which
I don't know
brilliant.
That one.
It was a complete, it was about her physiological capability in cold water swimming and open water swimming and the experiments that were run. But in the course of these experimentations, she begins to process some profound grief.
Mm.
It was brilliant.
Wow.
She's a very good writer.
Yeah. It. All right. Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Joanna, thank you. Appreciate that. Lynn Cox, we got it on the list. Yeah. All right. Jill.
I have one more thing to say about John Cheever, which you may or may not know, which is I didn't know for a long time, and I had been living in Norwell since I was in seventh grade. I discovered by a friend of mine who was a big fan of John Cheever. We were visiting my family in Norwell at one point, and he was like, "Well, can we go see John Cheever's grave?" And I was like, "What do you mean? Can we go see John Cheever's grave?" And as it happens, John Cheever is buried at the First Parish Cemetery in Norwell.
Oh.
And there is now a Cheever Tavern next to the sort of very close to where the graveyard is. So if you want to go visit his...
Look for the tavern, okay.
Look for All the right. tavern.
What's your next book?
The next book I'm going to talk about is Swimming Studies by Leanne Shapton. And it is a really interesting bunch of stories. It's not, it's about her swimming. It turns out that Leanne Chapin had been a great swimmer and had been up to beyond all kinds of teams, but didn't make it. And in one of the articles about this book, it's written, "The talented illustrator Leanne Shapton, in her pointillistic and quietly profound new memoir, Swimming Studies, recalls how, in 1988 and 1992, specializing in the breaststroke, she made it as far as the Canadian Olympic trials. Ms. Shapton writes as confidently as she draws and memorably conjures swimming's intense, primordial, and isolating pleasures." And one section of this is about her bathing suits. And she has photos of every bathing suit that she wore. They're not, however, in color, so you can't really see what they're in color. But she has a little story about each bathing suit that she has worn at any given point. There's one Speedo black nylon used as a doubling suit for training from 1988 to 1992. And she writes, "I am the first one in Stockholm Central Bidet this Monday morning, followed by James, then by an old man wearing big yellow goggles who does a steady breaststroke around the perimeter of the pool. Watching him, I switch to breaststroke myself and match his speed. It feels comfortable. It feels relaxing. As the three of us swim counterclockwise. I channel my old age, my flabby form, my unselfconscious senior. I think of the two older women I passed in the locker room whose modest black tanks encased humps and bones and bumpy flesh, the cruel phrase a friend once used to describe a woman's backside, a bagful of doorknobs. I watch my hands trace their double ellipse in front of me, my mother's wrists, my grandmother's knuckles." And she talks in all different ways about her love of swimming. And it's really a fascinating story because there's a little bit of everything about her world and also about water in general. And her opening piece is, "Water is elemental. It's what we're made of, what we can't live within or without. Trying to define what swimming means to me is like looking at a shell sitting in a few feet of clear, still water. There it is in sharp focus, but once I reach for it, breaking the surface, the ripples refract the shell. It becomes 5 shells, 25 shells, some smaller, some larger, and I blindly feel for what I saw perfectly before, trying to grasp it." It's a really interesting collection of her thoughts about swimming, and it's Swimming Studies by Leanne Shapton.
Great. Peter.
Well, Joanne, who just called in about whoever wrote about swimming all the kettle holes on Cape Cod.
Yeah, Robert Finch.
Okay, Robert, yes, inspired by the Cheever's short story, The Swimmer. That story also inspired this book, Waterlogged, by Roger Deakin, who's a wonderful British nature writer who was. And he was inspired by the story to do the same thing, only swimming all through Britain, in the moats and rivers and streams and fens and everything like that. And he's a terrific writer. So he did the Cheever story, but on a much grander scale. And it's much... He's a wonderful nature writer, and it's full of like that British humor that a lot of people don't get, but I love it.
I love it too.
But it was inspired by the Cheever short story. So here he is. "The more I thought about it, the more obsessed I became with the idea of a swimming journey. I started to dream ever more exclusively of water. Swimming and dreaming were becoming indistinguishable. I grew convinced that following water, flowing with it, would be a way of getting under the skin of things, of learning something new. I might learn about myself, too. In water, all possibilities seemed infinitely extended. Free of the tyranny of gravity and the weight of the atmosphere, I found myself in the wide-eyed condition described by the Australian poet Les Murray when he said, 'I am only interested in everything.'" So this, it's a terrific book, and it's a great way, if let's say you're going to travel in Britain, if having read this book, you'd be interested in places you never would have thought you would have gone to, and you'd see a completely different Britain. So Waterlogged by Roger Deakin.
All right, Jill.
Well, I brought a picture book because I thought we should have at least one picture book for kids who are learning how to swim. And this one is Amos and Boris by William Stieg. It's a classic. Claire Massad, who is a great fiction writer, wrote about this book, "Every so often, just because I reread the books of William Stieg, Amos and Boris, or Brave Irene, or Dr. DeSoto, and each time they fill me with joy and tenderness. William Stieg was a genius." And this book is just, the illustrations are beautiful, the story is beautiful, and a rodent ends up on a boat who then ends up in the water. And he, as he comes off his boat, he says, "Help." He squeaked as he grabbed desperately at the rodent, because his boat was called Rodent, but it evaded his grasp and went bowling along under full sail, and he never saw it again. And there he was, where? In the middle of the immense ocean, 1,000 miles from the nearest shore, with no one else in sight as far as the eye could see, and not even so much as a stick of driftwood to hold on to. "Should I try to swim home?" Amos wondered. "Or should I just try to stay afloat?" He might swim a mile, but never 1,000. He decided to just keep afloat, treading water and hoping that something, who knows what, would turn up to save him. But what if a shark or some big fish, a horse mackerel, turned up? What was he supposed to do to protect himself? He didn't know. Well, who comes to his rescue but a whale? So you can imagine the rat and the whale. And the whale saves him, essentially. And they do finally get to shore. And at the end, it says, in a few minutes, Boris was already in water with waves washing at him, and he was feeling the wonderful wetness. You have to be out of the sea, really, to know how good it is to be in it, he thought. That is, if you're a whale. Soon he was able to wiggle and wriggle into deeper water. So the whale saves the rat, and it's beautiful illustrations. It's a really sweet story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a classic. William Steig's Amos and Boris.
Right. Cynthia Barnstable says, regarding Lynn Cox's Tales of Al, a chapter about her swimming in the surf on the West Coast with two Newfoundlands, fabulous, and of course the subtitle, Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog. Don't know that one, but it sounds interesting.
It does.
Yeah. All right, what's your next book?
Well, the next one is called The Watermen by Michael Lloyd, and it's the birth of American swimming and one young man's fight to capture Olympic gold. Mm. So this book is partly about the whole development of the Olympics, but it's also about Charlie Daniels, who was the first great male American swimmer in a long line of Olympic swimmers that include Johnny Weissmuller, about whom I also couldn't find a good book, Mark Spitz, and Michael Phelps. So the first of those was Charlie Daniels. He was an 8-time Olympic medalist in 1904 and 1908, came from the New York Athletic Club. He held every freestyle record from 25 yards to a mile, but he helped invent the American crawl.
Oh.
So we haven't got into the swimming strokes, and you were talking about it a bit, Jill. So there, it's interesting because in Western, let's call it European and European-derived cultures, there was no crawl, the freestyle as we know it today. The breaststroke was the basic crawl stroke, and then the side stroke also, which is a useless. It's so slow. There was a kind of backstroke, but not the backstroke where your arms come out of the water. It was the backstroke where you're sculling. Arms out of the water was not a European type thing. So the invention of freestyle swimming, and Charlie Daniels was part of that, is really important. But there's a caveat here, and this has been observed by explorers, you know, going way, way back, and also for some of the people who came first to the United States. They noticed that indigenous people, like African people and Native Americans, had a strange style of swimming, which was much faster than they had. And the descriptions of it aren't great, but it's clear that their arms were out of the water. So freestyle has probably been around for centuries, but it wasn't part of like the European world. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here is the race where Charlie Daniels first. The fast stroke at this time was something called the trudgeon. Now, named after a guy called Trudgeon, who I guess had copied it from a South American he'd seen. In this stroke, the arms did come up out of the water, but the back of the body was still doing a kind of scissor kick that went derived from the side stroke. So it was an absurd. But that was the fastest thing they had at this time. And then the Australian crawl came along, where the back end still wasn't proper, but the front end was more like we've seen it. But there was no, the American crawl, the one that's used now, was not there. So here's the first race. It was a race in what, in an English bath, they called them, but it's a pool. "Are you ready?" called the official. Charlie filled his lungs. When no one in the baths knew was that Charlie had a secret. "Go." The men exploded off the deck, hitting the smooth water in one huge splash. They surged beneath the surface for a good 10 yards and emerged with six pairs of arms churning the tank into a froth. Hal May's powerful legs pounded the water, seething white, with a version of Charlie's four-beat American crawl, as did Derbyshire's in lane two. But Charlie seemed to glide atop the surface. His arms speared the water with hardly a ripple in nice smooth rotations, while his calves and feet cut the pool like a propeller blade. What no one knew was that Charlie had been secretly working on a new six-beat crawl, three kicks to each arm stroke. The added two kicks between the strokes made him feel as if he were swimming downhill as opposed to flat. Or uphill, as you'd feel without using the legs. Hmm. And he won that race and was undefeated for a long time after, until other people could master the American crawl.
And the book is?
The Watermen by Michael Loyne.
All right. If you've got a book for our list this morning with a theme of swimming, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. It's The Point, and it is our monthly book show. The theme is swimming. With us is New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams and reference librarian Jill Erickson. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Carol is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. a couple of things. One is the new... Colin McCann book, Twist, has a great deal to do with swimming and diving and freestyle diving, among other things. It's not his best book, but it is, but because it's Colin McCann, it's wonderful. Anyhow.
What was the name of it again, Carol? What was it called?
Twist, T-W-I-S-T.
Twist, okay.
And it's not been out very long at all.
Okay.
The other is a story from my days as a children's bookstore owner, gratitude to Pete for helping that along at times.
Gratitude to you, too. Thank you, Carol.
But there would be trade shows, and at the trade shows, the publishers would invite booksellers to have nice dinners. This is one of the few perks of the job with authors. And so there was a book, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the name of it, but it was about, it was a young man who was an author who had been a swimmer, and he'd written a novel about a boy who was making his mark on the world, and I think a girl, by trying to swim the butterfly and race as a butterfly stroke swimmer. And as this young man presented the story in his book and how it came to have been written, he gradually took off his shirt and his undershirt, and finally he had stripped down to his Speedo.
Oh, how funny.
Ezra was in an uproar as one thing and another came off. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember the name.
But you remember that presentation, Carol.
You were distracted.
Now I know what to do at my next book signing.
Okay, that's the end of my story.
Carol, thanks for sharing. We'll see if we can come up with the name of that. I'm not sure what that is, but we'll check it out. Thanks, Carol, for the call. Appreciate it. All right, Jill, what have you got next?
I have here Swim, Why We Love the Water by Lynn Shear. And this book was on, Wall Street Journal did a 5 best books on swimming, and this was one of the 5 books. Ms. Shear also describes, this is part of the review that they wrote. Ms. Shear also, and it's sort of clicks with what Kara was just saying. Ms. Shearer also describes how swimsuits have changed, particularly for women. The bikini was developed in 1946, which I wouldn't have thought it was that long ago.
I thought it was like the 1960s, yeah.
Well, they were very popular in the 1960s. Drawing its name from the site of a U.S. nuclear weapons test in the Pacific Ocean. Perhaps a nod to the suit's explosive effect on the planet, according to Ms. Shearer. So that is one of the things you learn inside this book. But she also writes, swimming is my salvation. Ask me in the middle of winter or at the end of a grueling day or after a long stretch at the computer where I'd most like to be. And the answer is always the same. In the water, gliding weightless, slicing a silent trail through whatever patch of blue I can find. Tell me, as the medical world does from time to time, to think of something pleasant and count backwards. And I'm back in the drink, enveloped by an ocean, a lake, or a turquoise box carving long and languorous laps that lull me into serenity. So she's a very good writer, and she also talks about women and their bathing suits. Want to see a grown woman, any woman, act like the victim in a horror film? Two words, bathing suit. Three more, trying one on. I think the day you go to buy a bathing suit is the day that even women who like to shop feel like committing suicide, says Nora Ephron, co-author of the play Loss and What I Wore, which x-rays our feelings about clothing. Calling swimsuits clothing may be charitable. Underwear, proclaims Patricia Marks dryly in The New Yorker. But unlike underwear, they do not work behind the scenes. Bathing suits are the whole show. Worse yet, she writes, you know who looks fabulous in a bathing suit? A mannequin. Also a hanger. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said in here about swimming and why she loves it, but it's also got some real funny stuff in it. So it is called Swim, Why We Love the Water by Lynn Shearer.
Linda is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Linda.
Hi. First of all, if Carol remembers the name of that book that she just described, I hope she will send it to you to put up on your website.
Oh, yes. If we can find it.
Yeah, please tell her to search that one out. And I was curious, but the last one just mentioned, as I was waiting for you to take the call, I'm looking for a book, because your topic intrigued me, something that a young person, a high school person who's into swimming, might be interested in. And I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I was just wondering whether there's anything on your website. I love to give my granddaughters a book the last day of school, so they'll have a summer, something to start the summer to read.
And these are teenagers, you said?
Yeah.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
Well, I think the next book I was going to do would be perfect. It's called Swimming to Antarctica by Lynn Cox.
Okay.
Ah, okay. Anything by Lynn Cox,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So this one is great because it's all about how she swam as a kid, all her, you know, that's how it begins. As a very young kid, she was swimming like 4 hours a day and
Hours?
Yes.
Wow.
Practice, two and two. So I think that would be good.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, I want you to talk about it. Linda, thanks for the call. Take a listen. Peter's got the answer for you. But
yeah,
thank you for calling.
This is Swimming to Antarctica by Lynn Cox. So I had a very fun moment with this because, you know, I opened the book. I got it from the Woods Hole Public Library. And so on the title page, 8/20/06. To the Woods Hole Public Library, all my warmest wishes, Lynn Cox.
Aww.
So that was really nice. So Lynn Cox is, okay, there are two types of swimmers. There's pool swimmers, you know, like racers and, you know, on swim teams. But then there are open water swimmers.
That's hard.
And the open water, so I'm very interested in an open water swimming. Because you're one, all of the reasons we've gone over. And Lynn Cox is one of the greatest open water swimmers who ever lived. And also probably the greatest open water, cold water swimmer who's ever lived. Although there's now in Chile a woman named Barbara Hernandez who's, I think, even surpassed her or pretty close. And this is an interesting thing. This is one athletic endeavor. distant endurance cold water swimming where women are actually better than men. Hmm. And for this, Lynn Cox thanks Ben and Jerry's. Because you're dealing with this subcutaneous fat, and she... one interesting thing is the specific gravity of human beings and the specific gravity of water are very, very close. It's almost like we're destined to do this because we sort of do float. The legs sink a little bit because they're denser. Anyway, she's been tested, Lynn Cox, of course. And not only does she have, subcutaneous fat, plenty of it, but she's also very muscular. And that combination of denseness and not makes her absolutely perfect. She's not too buoyant, but she doesn't have to use any energy to stay above the water or below. Anyway, she, at the age of 14, she swam from Catalina to Palos Verdes, to California. She swam which is 21 miles on a straight line, but they never do a straight line. She was the next year at the age of 15, she swam the English Channel. She was the first person to swim the Strait of Magellan. She swam from Alaska to Russia. Okay, so it's not that long a swim, 2.5 miles from the last island of the Aleutians to the first of the Soviet. It was Soviet in those days. And she did it kind of as a way to warm up the Cold War a little bit. But these swims she's doing in cold water are without wetsuits or anything like that. Trained herself to do this. And her greatest swim, the one she's probably most known for, was the shortest. It was about a mile, but it was in Antarctica, where she swam from a boat to the Antarctic shore in 32 degree temp water. Wow. With just, the bathing suit and Vaseline or something like that on her. But that's it. So part of it is her unique physiology. But the other part is just, this is a woman who is really part fish. She, but it's mental. She just loves, she's exhilarated by these swims. Things that are so hard and difficult, she's having a blast. It's not faked. It's for real. So do we have time for me?
We've got like 2 minutes.
Okay.
Now. Yeah.
Here she is coming into shore in Antarctica. Turning in toward shore, I again lifted my foot and waved it, and my friends waved back and cheered. 100 yards from shore, I saw chin-strap penguins sliding head first, like tiny black toboggans down a steep snowbank. When they reached the base of the hill, they used their bristly tail like brakes, sticking them into the snow to stop their momentum. They waddled across the beach at full tilt, holding their wings out at their sides for balance. When they neared the zodiacs, they dove and flapped their wings under the water, as if they were flying through the air. It was amazing to think that this is the only place they would fly. I had no idea why they were swimming with me, but I knew it was a good sign. Lynn Cox.
Yeah. And like we said, this one is swimming to
America.
Swimming to Antarctica. Anything with Lynn Cox.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We're going to have a link a little bit later today to all the books we talked about at our website, capeandislands.org. As always, reference librarian Jill Erickson, New York Times bestselling author Peter Abrahams. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Happy swimming.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.